Practic Examiners, Executive Director, and the Chiropractic Association versus Texas Medical Association, and here for the appellants.
Frank Keenan from the Texas Solicitor General's Office for the Board.
All right.
And Matt Wood from the Chiropractic Association.
All right, very good.
David Bragg for Texas Medical Association, and with me is Rocky Wilcox, General Counsel of Texas Medical Association.
All right, thank you, Mr. Bragg. And are you all going to be splitting up some time?
Yes, Your Honor. We had planned to do Mr. Keenan go first for approximately 8 minutes, and then I would do 7 minutes after that, and then we'd say 5 for rebuttal.
Okay.
And we've split it based on issues. We'll try to as best we can.
Okay. All right, very good. Thank you. Mr. Keener, if you want to go ahead and take the podium. And for those of you in the audience, if you'd take just a moment and silence any electronic devices that you might have, we would certainly appreciate that. And whenever you're ready.
May it please the court, I plan to argue the two nerve issues, and counsel for the Chiropractic Association plans to cover diagnosis and vaunt. At its core,
and nerve is kind of where the whole everything else sort of starts, isn't it?
I think that's right.
Yeah.
Nerve and
the quote unquote diagnosis issue sort of looks different if you depend on whether nerve is part of the musculoskeletal system or not.
Well, I think that's exactly why it's so helpful to start from the nerve issues, then go to diagnosis.
Gotcha.
And vaunt, because the entire validity challenge to the definitions that involve these nerve terms depends on fully excluding nerves from the Chiropractic Act. And the trial court erred because it accepted TMA's implausible and atextual distinction between nerves and the musculoskeletal system. TMA's interpretation of musculoskeletal system and subluxation complex to exclude nerves cannot be right because they are functionally unworkable interpretations because they upend statutory language. First, TMA's interpretation doesn't work because segregating out all the body's nerves is just not functionally possible. The legislature could not have excluded nerves from the scope of chiropractic. Think of bread and butter chiropractic matters like sciatica, bulging discs, compressed nerves, nerve entrapment caused by muscle spasms or other biomechanical causes. And of course, chiropractors cannot address pain without nerves because the pain, of course, is a nerve signal. So the undisputed physiological fact is that nerves are inside of and connected to the muscles and necessary to move those muscles and move the body.
Well, can't you say the same thing about the circulatory system? I mean, the muscles don't get energy, they don't move, they eventually die. Wouldn't that same logic extend to blood vessels?
I don't think it would, and certainly not within the board's own interpretation of these statutory terms, because at a minimum, look at subluxation complex. Every definition of subluxation complex at issue has a nerve component. And even the board's unchallenged definition of subluxation itself refers to it as a functional entity which may influence biomechanical or neural integrity. So that reflects a particular terminology and understanding of the relationship between nerves, muscles, bones, the associated tissues and nerves that move the body and maintain its form. And that's what's reflected in the board's rule. Because the statute cannot rule out nerves, the board's limited definition in that respect can't undermine and can't be inconsistent with the statutory text. So the legislature understood chiropractic includes this limited aspect of the body's nerves that's reflected in the board's rule. And therefore, TMA did not meet its burden to show that the rule was invalid in every application or invalid in the specific context of this test that it challenged. The second point I'd like to make is that TMA's interpretation would redefine statutory terms in a way that is inconsistent with the words the legislature chose and essentially yields absurd results. They would have the court believe that in the very statute that authorizes chiropractic, through the same words authorizing chiropractic, the legislature sub silentio meant to redefine what it means to be a chiropractor and practice chiropractic. And I think TMA ultimately has no answer to this court's own observation in TMA 1 that the subluxation complex could be read as part of the biomechanical condition of the musculoskeletal system. That subluxation complex has a nerve component, and that gives full effect to the text as written. And the TMA argument overlooks the full phrase being interpreted, which is biomechanical condition of the musculoskeletal system. Their argument,
and you're saying basically some nerves count for part of that and some don't. That it's not, you're not opening up the whole body Halstead type problem, because you draw a line somewhere where the nerves that are part of the musculoskeletal system end and the rest of the nerve system begins. That's kind of y'all's thinking, right?
I think that that's generally right, Your Honor. And 2 points that
what
I'd like to
the make. Legislature, though, I mean, we're kind of fighting about what the legislature meant by the word musculoskeletal. TMA makes the point that you're really talking about a different system here. I mean, why couldn't they have drawn the line that way? I mean, it seems like a difficult thing to do in a case-by-case basis to figure out, you know, what nerves are fair game and what nerves are not.
I think the ultimate term to be interpreted is biomechanical condition of the musculoskeletal system.
Right.
So that's
okay. Biomechanical condition.
Biomechanical condition of the musculoskeletal system. That's point one. Point two would be whatever the limit is between some nerves being in or nerves being out. The court does not need to parse that distinction in this case, because they've built their case on excluding nerves totally. And some nerves have to be in. The witnesses at trial, for example, agreed that nerves were associated with the musculoskeletal system. And I think there was some quibbling about, well, if it was closely associated, for example, Dr. Malone might have less of an issue with it. But we're just talking about, are they in at all or out? And that's one way of resolving this case. The other reality.
Well, if you say that nerves are in at all, it implies that there has to be a line drawing. Otherwise, you've opened up a whole system and you get into neurology and all the stuff that they're, the parade of horribles that TMA talks about.
Well, they only, TMA.
I mean, my point is your argument necessarily implies that there has to be a line drawing of some nerves counting, some nerves not. We don't have to do that. We wouldn't be the ones deciding where that line is in this case. What we're saying is that line drawing would be necessary, and that may say something about how we construe the relevant statutory language here.
Well, a couple points there. The rule itself has limits. We're only talking about these associated nerves, so a locational limitation, and we're referring to those that move the body and maintain its form, and that's essentially a functional limit. It's important to note, TMA is only raising this parade of horribles by just ignoring what the rule says. And the board isn't even going as far as claiming this interpretation of covering, you know, the brain, the optic nerve. So it's really only by bad textual interpretation that TMA is trying to drum up this parade of horribles. And as the court noted in TMA 2, practitioners can examine other parts of the body in assisting in analyzing and evaluating the biomechanical condition of the musculoskeletal system. So if there were some line drawing question, I think the law of the case dictates that as long as the focus is on the biomechanical condition of the musculoskeletal system, the line drawing just isn't a problem. And of course, the legislature knew how to create a referral requirement for practitioners. but did not impose a referral requirement to get access to a chiropractor. So these questions at the margin are just largely imaginary. Ultimately, these are policy disputes that TMA has with the legislative terms that were chosen in the Chiropractic Act, and those are more appropriately addressed to the legislature and not the courts. Because TMA cannot show that the legislature excluded nerves, it can't show that the board's rule is invalid.
Counsel, what we do know is that the legislature wanted the practice of chiropractic to be limited. You'd agree with that, right? By virtue of the occupations code, where it ties it to the biomechanical condition of the spine and musculoskeletal system of the human body, correct?
Correct. The scope of chiropractic is defined in the Chiropractic Act.
And that's limited.
It is correct. I think it is limited in a sense. It's not purporting to author. It's not like Halsted, for example. This is not a scenario where the legislature is trying to authorize generally. I think limited is a
can we,
good term.
In this proposed statutory construction argument, are we supposed to determine or conclude that the legislature, by excluding nerves and these granulated medical issues that they don't have expertise about, that is persuasive, that it somehow broadens this limitation?
I think actually the terms suggest just the opposite conclusion. And for example, look at subluxation complex. That is the legislature's own term that it put in the statute. And that has this nerve component, and that indicates that the legislature understands what chiropractors do, and that includes this nerve component, and that this is not something that would be beyond the training and experience and education of chiropractic, but in fact, the legislature is comfortable with it in this limited and in the limited sense that the board rule reflects, and it's not expanding it to the outermost reaches of indeterminacy in TMA's attempt to try to drum up some sort of parade of horribles. So,
may it please the court. I'll be addressing the diagnosis issues and the vaunt issues for the court, but I'd like to continue on a theme that was developed by my colleague in the first part of this argument, and that is that the scope of practice for chiropractors is in fact limited. It is very limited, both by the statutory language and by the board's rules, which are an attempt to clarify the scope, the very vague language in the Chiropractic Act, and give it a more definite substance. In particular with diagnosis, I'd like to start by saying that this issue has been resolved almost as many ways as it's possible to resolve it. We have the legislature recently weighing in, expressly affirming that chiropractors can in fact diagnose, and we have this court's decision in TMA 1, which explicitly addressed the clauses that TMA is challenging in this case, the diagnosis clauses as we've called them in the briefing, and found that they are in fact consistent with the statute.
Well, the posture of that case was it was kind of strange. It was almost a theoretical. I think we assumed that whatever diagnosed meant it was just tied to the statutory scope.
I believe that's
because
correct,
of the
Your Honor.
Way it was teed up. You know, there was the cross appeal issue, and I mean, it seems like the legislative change might address what we term the broad issue of just sticking the term diagnosis, quote unquote, in your rule. Ipso facto bad, they may have cleared that up.
That's correct, Your Honor. So in TMA 1, there was a threshold issue, is diagnosis of any kind allowed? Then there was the second question of, if it is, which the court assumed in that case for procedural reasons, is this specific rule as written consistent?
To the extent that it's synonymous with evaluate, analyze, or whatever the other buzzword is, correct?
But Your Honor, the synonymous was used in the case, but the court explicitly said it was not interpreting that language. It was not reaching the merits. So procedurally, the court was assuming that diagnosis in the rule was allowed. Procedurally, it's consistent with the statute. The question is the scope of diagnosis allowed by the rule consistent with the statute? And the truth is, the legislature has addressed the very issue that this court was able to step over in TMA 1, that threshold issue, is no longer a live issue. It's now been mooted by the legislature. So we're left with the legislature saying the district court in TMA 1 got it right, diagnosis is allowed, And we're left with this court's ruling that the diagnosis clauses are consistent with the statute. That is res judicata. TMA is attacking the very same clauses in this case that it attacked in TMA 1. The relevant law is not changed.
Is it res judicata or law of the case? That conceivably could make a difference.
It would be res judicata, Your Honor, because it was a separate cause entirely. Okay. The previous TMA 1 appeal.
Even though we
appeal,
have the same underlying cause.
It was a separate entire case.
It was
a new petition was filed in the district court for this case. It's been entirely different.
Okay.
The only difference is that the Vaught clause was added, but that is not a material change in the law. The language that this court interpreted and upheld in TMA 1 has not changed since that decision. It is the same material law. And I would cite the court to one case, the Hilltop Baptist case, 995 Southwest 2nd 905, where this court found that a non-material change in the law after a previous decision does not somehow remove the res judicata effect, that it continues forward. And that language is identical in all respects. The other thing I would say very briefly about Vaught is that there's two issues this court needs to consider. One, can Vaught be used for legitimate chiropractic purposes? Can it? And second, does the rule limit chiropractors to those legitimate purposes? TMA took that Vaught clause out of context. When you look at it in the scope of the entire rule and you look at the evidence in the record, the answer is yes to both questions. Yes, Vaught can be used for legitimate chiropractic purposes. We have the differential diagnosis of cervical vertigo, of a vertebral condition. And the board's rule limits chiropractors not to do Vaught for any purpose, but to do it for four purposes: biomechanical condition, subluxation, determine the proper treatment, and determine if a referral is necessary.
Now, does our answer to question one, as you phrased it, depend upon how we resolve the issue your co-counsel talked about, whether or not nerves are fair game?
Are you referring to the diagnosis issue, Your Honor?
Well, you've said that the first question, in regard to Vaught, can it be used for a legitimate chiropractic purpose? Does the answer to that question depend, or to what extent does it depend on the answer about how we view biomechanics of the musculoskeletal system and whether or not nerves are fair game within that type of analysis?
Well, Your Honor, I guess it would depend
on... It's affected by that answer, isn't it?
It would affect the practical reality of what chiropractors can do. But here's what the record showed about how Vaught is used. And the answer to your question is that I don't think it would affect it, because it really depends on how you interpret subluxation complex. That really is the issue. Subluxation complex, as the record showed, is what causes the cervical vertigo. Okay? Now that, as the undisputed evidence shows from every possible source that either side could muster, and every source that I've been able to find through Google searching, the nerve component is essential to the subluxation complex. I have never seen a definition that excluded it. If you take that out, you rewrite the statute. That is no longer a subluxation complex at that point. And so if the subluxation complex has the nerve component, then the vertigo caused by the subluxation complex, the cervical vertigo, would be within the scope of practice. So the question then is, Vaught, could it be useful to help identify that cause? And the answer is yes. So that's a long way to answer your question, Your Honor, but I think they are independent. It's really dependent on the subluxation complex definition.
Okay, as opposed to the biomechanics. I get it.
Thank you, Your Honor. I see my time is out unless the court has any further questions.
May it please the court, counsel. Let me deal first with the legislative intent issue. If you look in the physical therapist statute in the occupations code, section 453.005 tells us what a physical therapist can do. Quote, measurement or testing of the function of the musculoskeletal, neurological, pulmonary, or cardiovascular systems. If the legislature could authorize physical therapists to deal with the neurological system, they could do the same, obviously, with chiropractors. And significantly, the very section that contains the terms we're talking about, use of diagnosis, that was amended in the last session, and they didn't touch the systems that a chiropractor is able to look at. Another thing I would like to point out is the reality setting of this. based on their witnesses that testified at the trial, there's no question that chiropractors are practicing neurology. Give an example of dizziness. There are many possible causes, and again, this is undisputed testimony at trial. There could be neurological diseases and disorders. There could be cardiovascular diseases and disorders. There could be tumors, disorders, or diseases involved in the vestibular apparatus, and even medication. But I'm going to take 45 seconds of my time to read this testimony. Dizziness and vertigo can have any number of causes, can't they? Answer from Dr. Thomas Hollingsworth, one of their witnesses, yes. They can involve the circulatory system. They can involve the brain. They can involve any number of things. And you apparently are able to diagnose cervical vertigo in your patients as the causes of the dizziness of the vertigo. You have to work through a lot of neurological possibilities to get down to cervical vertigo, don't you? Answer, yes, sir. And you make the determination as to whether those conditions exist or don't exist. Answer, yes, sir. And since you are a portal of entry doctor, you decide whether that patient needs to go see another doctor, one who might be a neurologist, for example, correct? Yes. Obviously, the patient has a part in making that decision as well, but yes. Subluxation complex. You have to pay close attention to the definition of that term in the statute. It's an aberrant relationship between two articular surfaces, two bones, that causes sequela, consequences, things happen.
Now, what is a sequel again, and how do you say it?
I think it's sequela.
Sequela.
But I've heard people say sequela.
What is that?
Those are the things that flow from something.
Okay.
In high school, I played football, not very well. I had a teammate who tackled a runner, and when he tackled the runner, his little finger got caught in the jersey. And when he got up, his little finger was making a right-hand turn.
Yeah.
So
I've had a thumb do that, by the way.
Well,
that's air hole on a helmet.
That's an aberrant relationship between two articular surfaces.
Yeah.
Now, how do you fix that? Because the statute says they're allowed to treat this subluxation complex. Uses the word treat. The way the coach did it was he grabbed the finger, jerked it back in place, and that was the treatment. There were certainly sequela from that, the pain, the swelling from the little finger, but that's what a subluxation complex is. There's nothing mysterious about it. The coach can't do a neurological examination of the little finger to see if was there any damage to the nerves. Neither can a chiropractor. Third thing, vestibular ocular nystagmus testing. It took me about half of this case to learn how to pronounce it. This test, according to undisputed testimony, is to determine, it's a test done by inner ear, test central nervous system disorders, Meniere's disease, that's where disorder of the inner ear causes dizziness, vascular compression, labyrinthitis, a disorder of the inner ear, again, where inflammation causes this, and then even other conditions. The VONT rule authorizes a purely diagnostic neurological test because that's what vestibular ocular nystagmus testing is, a purely neurological test. It's a test designed to reveal conditions of the brain, inner ear, and eyes, none of which are part of the musculoskeletal system. There's no disorder of the spine or musculoskeletal system caused by any vestibular system pathology. And last, and this was the question asked in the prior opinion, VONT does not reveal anything about the biomechanical condition of the spine or musculoskeletal system. That's direct testimony from our expert, Dr. Kemper.
And all of these points that you just made were specific findings of fact, if I recall correctly.
That's correct, Your Honor. The no disorder is caused by the vestibular finding of fact 27, unchallenged.
The brain and inner ears and eyes are not part of the spine. Musculoskeletal finding of fact 27 unchallenged. On down the line, there's only a few findings of fact that seemed like they were challenged. They tended not to be identified by number, so it was kind of hard to figure out exactly what it was that was being challenged. So we feel that this rule, number one, is intended to allow chiropractors to practice neurology. The court made a finding on that as well based on the testimony at trial, that in fact chiropractors are practicing neurology. That's based on the testimony from their witnesses. And we believe that expanding by including the word neuro in the musculoskeletal condition, including the word neuro in the subluxation complex, that specifically authorizes them to do something the legislature has not seen fit to authorize them to do. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bragg.
I'd like to start by addressing this idea that chiropractors are practicing neurology. I think that is just that is simply not true. We've taken great pains in our briefs to spell out all the various restraints that act on chiropractors to prevent them from being neurologists. Let me give you an example of how differential diagnosis works. It is essential to the practice of chiropractic. Vaughn is probably not the best test case. It's complicated. And the differential diagnosis process requires some explaining to show how a true cervical problem in the neck can cause dizziness, a subluxation complex. But that can look to the chiropractor like a vestibular problem. They can't rule it out. So looking for abnormal findings on a Vaughn test, if there's an abnormal finding, the chiropractor does not definitively diagnose anything vestibular. They refer it out. They're just looking for an abnormal finding. If there's no abnormal finding, that helps confirm that there's a cervical problem in the neck. The record is undisputed that cervical problems in the neck, in the vertebrae, can cause dizziness that can look like a vestibular problem. Chiropractors are not definitively diagnosing vestibular problems. They are simply checking for abnormalities that would justify a referral. And secondly, they are not, and I cannot stress this enough, they are not going out looking for vestibular problems that have no connection to the musculoskeletal system. What the rule authorizes and what the record showed is that chiropractors can use Vaughn as part of a differential diagnosis in order to identify that musculoskeletal problem. So that limited use, not free-ranging neurological adventures, that limited use is authorized by the statute. That is, under the plain language of the statute, evaluating the biomechanical condition of the musculoskeletal system.
What ties that, though, to the plain language of the statute?
Well, Your Honor, the plain
language...
Some
degree of medical knowledge of how that's tied?
Well, it would be from the record we know that the symptoms of cervical vertigo, which is a undisputed biomechanical problem in the neck, subluxation complex, actually, is what the record shows, a chiropractic condition. The symptoms of that, vertigo, can look like a vestibular problem.
And aren't these factual findings?
There was a factual finding. I'm not sure each one of those points was addressed by a finding, Your Honor. And we set out in our reply brief exactly which findings we've challenged. So that should clarify that issue if there's any concern there. But there was a factual finding that I think is on point that I think is contradicted by undisputed evidence. And that is a finding by the trial court that the only use of Vaughn is to diagnose vestibular problems. The undisputed evidence showed that that is just one use. It can also be used as part of a differential diagnosis of these cervical problems that can cause symptoms that look like a vestibular problem. And so the trial court was not wrong that it can be used for that purpose. It can be, but that's not what the record showed chiropractors are using it for. And the board's rule does not authorize them to use it for that purpose, just to go look for vestibular problems. It's only for that differential purpose is what the record showed. There was also a statement that chiropractors are just practicing neurology. But again, the only time chiropractors have the ability to take into account nerves is not nerves for their own sake. It has to be potentially linked to a subluxation complex, and it has to be potentially linked to the biomechanical condition of the musculoskeletal system or spine. In those limited circumstances, the statute gives chiropractors the ability to do that evaluation, and the rules give them that ability and limit them to those purposes. That's why the rule is consistent with the statute. TMA has suggested that chiropractors are practicing neurology, but that's all they're doing. In some situations, they have to take into account nerves in order to do exactly what's within their scope. Pain is the best example. Pain is in the nervous system. But every day, thousands of people across the state, as they've been doing for decades, go to a chiropractor and say, my back hurts. The chiropractor has to take that into account. That's a nervous system function. If you take away nerves entirely, you take away the ability to even consider pain. You take away a huge part of chiropractors' profession and livelihood. That's never been chiropractic. Pain has always been a focus of that. Dizziness is kind of like pain in that sense, and that's why Vaunt is relevant. Vaunt's not about pain. Vaunt's really about dizziness, which is a nervous system symptom but can have a biomechanical or subluxation cause. In those limited circumstances, the rule authorizes and the statute allows chiropractors to consider the nerves and to take those into account. In every case, every single case in the record that Mr. Bragg has pointed to say that chiropractors are practicing neurology, there is always that connection. There is always that connection. Chiropractors are not going out to diagnose MS. They are not going out to diagnose Alzheimer's.
Are you saying, though, they'd have to rule out all these things to get to something, to determine whether something is fair game or within their scope of practice?
We're not saying that, Your Honor. Okay. There is,
man,
there's
I,
only...
Because you're suggesting that we need all these, the Vaunt and these other sort of, I think y'all termed it differential diagnoses. I mean, how far does that go?
Well, Your Honor...
If you didn't have an explicit limitation on incisive procedures, why couldn't you cut them open and find out what's going on, you know?
Well, there's only, again, this goes back to the differential nature. Yeah. There are only so many conditions that are not musculoskeletal, that are not subluxations, that can mimic or look like a musculoskeletal or subluxation complex. That limit is not written in law. It is written in the human body. And there's only so much that can do. And as I was mentioning, there are a huge number of things that would not be differentially diagnosable according to that. I mentioned Alzheimer's, melanoma, glaucoma. I mean, you could go on and on. There are so many things that have nothing to do with that connection that's required by the statute, and that's where the rule limits it to chiropractors. I think it's important to point out that the statute, the plain language of the statute, does not limit chiropractors to the musculoskeletal system in their evaluation, their consideration of it. That has to be the purpose, no doubt about it. That is the anchor. But as this court has already held in a previous appeal in this case, chiropractors can look beyond the musculoskeletal system for the limited purpose of figuring out what's going on in the musculoskeletal system. That's pain, which is in the nervous system. That's vertigo, which is in the nervous system. And that's all Vaunt, under the board's rule, allows. That's all differential diagnosis, if this court were to allow that, interpreting the rule. That's all the rule allows, is for those purposes. There was also a suggestion that subluxation complex is just a joint that's out of place, like a thumb that's come out of its socket. That's not, I think that's an easy illustration, but the subluxation complex is more subtle than that. I don't want to leave the court with the impression that just a dislocation like that is the only thing a subluxation can be. Chiropractors do look for more subtle misalignments in the spine and in the joints. And so it's not just something popped out, pop it back in. Mm-hmm. Let me give you an example of why it's not quite that simple.
I think you've about run out of time.
Oh, I'm sorry, Your Honor. Yes, that's fine. My time is up. If I may say one last comment for the court's benefit, I do believe this case began as a misunderstanding. I think that TMA saw the Vaunt clause and saw the nerves in the definitions and thought that was throwing open the door to the nervous system. In reality, when you read these rules in context, you see the limits that are placed. You see the way it ties back to the musculoskeletal system and the subluxation complex. And so in reality, by upholding these rules and giving them a reasonable interpretation, you actually address virtually all of TMA's concerns. This is a case where correctly interpreting the rules, giving them a reasonable interpretation and upholding them, as we've outlined in our brief, I believe should be satisfactory to both sides ultimately, because no one is contending that chiropractors are the equal of medical neurologists or allowed to go on freestanding diagnoses of those conditions. We are really asking the court to simply allow the status quo to continue as it's been doing for 30 years. This scope authorized by the board, this is striking down these rules in the way TMA is suggesting, taking nerve out entirely, would be a radical change to this profession, affecting thousands of chiropractors. That is not required by the board's rules and the language. It's not required by the statute, and we would submit that it would be an error of law, and we ask the court to allow chiropractors to continue the scope of practice that they've historically had and as the legislature intended them to have. Thank you.
Thank you. We thank both sides for your presentation. With that, the case will be submitted for consideration, and the court will be in recess.
All rise.